Hey folks, it's Jesse, the founder of MaxFun. Since we postponed our annual MaxFun drive in mid-March, we have gotten a lot of questions about if and when we'd be rescheduling it. And honestly, we've been asking ourselves the same thing. Well, now we have an answer for you. The 2020 MaxFun drive will start on July 13th. That's coming up soon. We decided to have the drive now because it's always brought a lot of joy and excitement to our community and certainly to us. And to be totally honest, it's also the main source of income for some of our hosts. Like pretty much everything right now, this year's drive is going to be a little different. We'll still be bringing you very special episodes, fun community activities, premium thank you gifts, but we also know it's a weird time and for some folks, a really difficult one. Some people are in a position to become new or upgrading members, others can't right now, and that is okay. We'll have ways for you to support MaxFun at every level, including some ways that won't cost you anything. We're also going to run the drive for 4 weeks instead of two. We didn't think it was a good time to be rushing anybody, and having a longer drive lets us be a little more low-key in our drive pitch. It also gives us more time to do fun stuff, like the weekly live streams we'll be putting on for charity throughout the drive. Most importantly, we want the 2020 MaxFun drive to highlight all the ways we support each other and our communities. We also want to show how grateful we are to you for making all the work that we do possible. Stay safe. We'll see you July 13th for the MaxFun Drive.
Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James. He, him, his. I'm a queer, political, actor, activist, comedian, cancerian, self-proclaimed, sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by another fabulous minority where we tackle the news, pop culture, politics, media, history, and more, all with a little self-care and self-love sprinkled throughout. Having never watched a single episode of Dawson's Creek, we give our black takes on the cast and all the juicy gossip, that's black gossip, that you came here for. On the flip side, Thandi Newton has been giving some compelling interviews recounting her experiences of sexual assault, the industry, shooting MI2 with Tom Cruise, which it sounded like a terrible experience, and being a black woman in the industry. We're going to dive into all of that. We've got our hand on the cancel button. Is it time to press it on party games like Cards Against Humanity or the Broadway hit now streaming into our Disney Plus's Hamilton? I don't know. We've got a full review and deep dive into our thoughts on if you're going to press the button. Also, am I the next Lin-Manuel Miranda? Probably not, but that's not going to make me stop because I'm not going to miss my shot. Aneke walks us through spouses who be working, the unsung heroes behind notable black figures like Frederick Douglass, Booker T. Washington, and Marcus Garvey. And when I say wives, I mean wives, because these brothers were getting married. They likes to get married. They were getting married to some bomb-ass women who we don't know about, because behind every great Michael Jordan is a Scottie Pippen. Well, let's learn, laugh, and play right here on Minority Corner. Gibbity bop bop beep bop bitty
dee. Yes, jazz.
Jazz.
Do it.
Jazz. It's our people's music.
Oh my God. Don't even. Remember the last time I was here? Because Black Lives Matter and black music matters too. Do you remember? You
Maybe
have too
that's
many hosts.
Why I brought that up. It was a connection between Aneke, okay, jazz, black people, and then Kenny G. My dad's like super about that Kenny G guy. Don't make that face. Oh, don't you judge my papa.
I mean, he got curly hair at least.
Yeah, he kind of is like...
He got something.
He's kind of, is he the Eminem of jazz music?
Yes, I think, yes. I think you hit it.
Very fair. And in fact, because you know I got my hand on the cancel button, I need to know where he stands with Black Lives Matter. Where you at, Kenny G?
What is he where even you doing? At? What?
People need to know.
Actually, I am kind of curious.
Right?
Also, does he still have his long hair?
I mean, if he doesn't, then, like, what are you doing? Like, that's your signature look. Like, don't change it up.
That's
like,
true.
It's
or,
like,
you know, yeah.
Because I would get confused. Although.
Yeah, because I was thinking about another long, curly haired white person.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Cut their hair. No, his hair is long.
Oh,
he's kept
okay.
it. He's kept that look. And
he's not
going to
change up
it.
His signature look.
No, but you know who did? Carrie Russell when she was doing Felicity.
She like shaved it off. She was like,
and the world went like,
I miss him. Ah, new me, new year, new me.
She didn't
fuck
shave
him.
It off. She just cut it short.
Oh, I'm having a. I only watched the commercials. It was one of those shows that I just watched peripherally.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just the commercials. Yeah. Same thing with like Dawson's Creek, which I was.
That's I watched that one peripherally, but I watched Felicity.
Oh, okay.
I was. About Felicity yeah. for some reason, I was like, ooh, college. I'm excited ooh. About college. Let me watch that.
And there's
that.
Not a lot
Dawson's
of shows.
Creek, I was like, who cares about high school? I'm in high school.
Show me what lies. Show me it gets better. Like, I'm getting out of
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Can you help me out, Dawson?
And there's
no?
not
okay.
a lot of shows about college. I couldn't get into Dawson's Creek, so I'm like, listen, I just finished 90210. Like, I'm not about to switch. But I will say, if you look at the cast, for whatever reason... On one of my music playlists, there was some song uh-huh. that was off the Dawson's Creek soundtrack or something. Not
okay,
the, I
random,
don't
wait. But all
right. Not that one.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Not
Paula
that
Cole.
One. I was not listening to that one. It
you
was
didn't
like,
have no Paula Cole on there?
Where not.
Have all the cowboys gone?
She could be on my nighttime sleepy playlist.
That works. She has a soothing
But looking
baritone.
At the cast photo... All of them have actually had like pretty, if you look at like Dawson's
yes.
Creek versus the cast of 90210, which oh. one has had like better careers? Hands down, the cast of Dawson's Creek.
100. Dawson's Creek was like a fucking farm for prestige actors. I don't know, prestige in maybe, but all of them are quality.
Do you think that it's because that they're more talented or they were able to just, or they came in at a different time, better managers, maybe all of the above?
I think the casting agent was really good and saw that raw talent, and they've all kind of in talent in different ways, where it's like Michelle Williams went off Oscar winner classic career.
Her and Fosse Verdon, oof.
I know, so good.
If you haven't watched it, your life is missing shit.
Watch it. Joshua Jackson.
He's still working.
He's super
just
woke
him.
Now.
He was on Little Fires Everywhere, like slaying it all day.
Has a new black baby.
Okay. I was like, I don't remember that episode in Little Fires Everywhere.
No,
okay.
real life episode. You know Queen Sugar?
Yes,
no, not
I
Queen
do
Sugar.
Know Queen Sugar.
No, Queen and Slim. Queen and Slim, that movie that came out with... you've heard of it,
oh,
right?
Oh, I know. It's got that one guy in it from Get Out.
Yeah.
Daniel Kaluuya.
Yes, yes. He plays the Slim. Mm. And then Queen
she's a newcomer.
His, who's Joshua Jackson's new wife and just gave birth to a baby.
Almost flipped everything off my desk out of excitement. Like, what? Good for her. Okay. Yes. All right. Hitching his wagon to that talented woman because she about to blow up.
I know. And speaking of babies, Dawson has like 20 kids, which is really wild
and
to me.
James Vanderbeek is very good at sort of making fun of himself. Most of the roles that he
yes.
does, he plays a heightened version of himself. Like, he's
yes,
pretty much
he likes to do that.
And he does it so well, and I'm always just sort of like, I'm here for that.
Did you ever see that show where he played Diplo?
No.
Weird.
Like, played it, like, on the radio? Like, I'm listening to some
no,
Diplo?
No, like,
played...
he was, like, he was Diplo. It was some weird short-lived comedy show where he, like, it was like a mockumentary following him around. As Diplo.
I don't really actually, I could not listen. If Diplo is the Dick Cheney to my Kiki Palmer, like if he
you
were
don't
to,
know him.
If he was walking across the
sorry
street,
to that man.
Sorry to this man, he could be walking across the street. I wouldn't even know it, Aneka. He could walk past me.
I think that was the point of the show.
That no
like,
one knows what Diplo
like,
looks like. I thought he
yeah, they got a vague idea what he looks like, and he's rich and obnoxious and like copies reggae music. And so
fair.
James Vanderbeek was like doing dumb shit like that.
Actually, that's perfect casting. And James Vanderbeek, I think, would do a great job of that. Like, he knows who he is. He's not trying to be anything else, but he's like, Like, you all kind of are annoyed by me and kind of don't like me. And you know, we lean into that. Like,
yeah.
Take notes, Jason Biggs. Like, you're not going to be
You're not going to be the likable exactly. person.
You're not.
I mean, don't trust the bee in apartment.
13.
Whatever.
Yeah.
13. Yeah. Played himself.
He was great. Fabulous. Okay. We were talking about canceled things. What?
We do have to just round out the cast, though.
Ugh, Katie Holmes, do we need to?
She secret dated Jamie Foxx for like 6 years.
Oh, we are getting the gossip today. I like how we're able to talk about like Dawson's Creek. This is why y'all come here, because you get the black perspectives. Because we know when a white person's dating a black person in Hollywood. We find
neither
out.
Neither one of us really watched the show either. So.
Oh, and we're going ham on some Dawson's Creek behind the scenes drama.
Know.
And we've never.
So ridiculous.
I saw one episode, and it was the one written by Kevin Williamson, because it was like Scream was the hot ticket. And they were like,
they
did like a Scream episode. Nobody died. It was like, but the commercials, it's like, not everyone's gonna survive. I think it was like some character.
It's like the one character
that
introduced.
Showed up. Like, oh, hey, Sally's here. Like, she got murdered.
Sally's gonna die. But yeah,
she's
Katie
literally
Holmes
the Star
dated
Trek person
Jamie
with the red
Fox.
Shirt. Jamie fucking Foxx. Okay, girl.
And the reason that she secret dated him for so long was because she signed a contract. She signed a contract with Tom Cruise that she couldn't publicly date anybody.
Ugh.
And right after they signed the year of whatever, they broke up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because, he has very tight contracts because with his beards,
Scientology.
Well, I mean, yeah, Scientology / beard / Hollywood contract. These are beard contracts. Nicole Kidman had one, like... It's the thing.
But then you're talking about something that's interesting because Scientology is notoriously homophobic.
100%. John Travolta, we're here for you. Like, everybody, listen, we're here for y'all, okay? It's interesting you bring up, like, Tom Cruise. Thandie Newton just had an interview recently.
Oh, right. I didn't read it. Is it good? Would you suggest it?
I do. I do suggest it. Okay. Thandie Newton's just really phenomenal and amazing. I
love her.
I love how much like in Westworld, they just like really leaned into her. Like everyone loves her and she's just a badass, like slaying all day, every day.
True, but she could have got a little bit more development, but we can talk about Westworld another time.
Okay, we'll put a pin in that. Okay. We'll put a pin in that. She'd be wielding that sword and kicking ass. You know I love a black lady who kicks.
I appreciate that. I love it. You know that I love a black lady kicking ass. Regina, call me.
Okay, so
just to talk.
Long story long, like there was a terrible scene. There was a scene in Mission Impossible 2. He just had a very short fuse, and Thandie Newton was like, he puts a lot of pressure on himself. And Thandie Newton's also talking about like her sexual assault that she had at a very young age, and how, and she was like 16 on her first movie that she did, and how the media will try to spin it as like, oh, the affair. Like she'd be in an interview.
Oh, yeah, some bullshit like that.
And she's
that,
like,
yeah.
It's very triggering. So she kept getting traumatized, double traumatized. Long story long.
Shit.
She was saying how like Tom Cruise would just the scene was oh my god, this is so shitty. So the scene was like there was a lot of extras. John Woo refused to speak English as they were filming the movie. It was just the thing that he does. He's not going to speak English.
But how does he communicate with his actors?
He's a translator. So it's already...
Okay, I mean, at least there's a translator.
As an actor, that would be so... It's like a game of telephone. And you're trying to like... So that's very challenging. But he directs such beautiful movies. So I guess
it works.
I know.
Those flying slow motion doves don't come out of just any director.
Oh, yeah. You not speak the devil's tongue, which is English, apparently.
Well, I mean, it is a language of colonizers. So.
Fair, I get it. Like, mad respect, John Woo. But so the scene, like, was Thandie Newton was like, the scene was like, they just couldn't get it. It was really challenging. And Tom Cruise, he just puts a lot of pressure on himself because Scientology has been like, you're the Jesus of the world, you know? Which is a lot of pressure.
That's a lot of pressure. And he's like hyper, hyper perfectionist. You could totally
tell
that.
Yes. And especially that was the movie where he first was like, I'm going to do all my stunts. And he was like rock climbing and all that shit. And Thandie Newton was saying that the scene was very challenging. He wasn't getting what he wanted in the scene. And then he was like, let's just do this as an exercise. He's like, you do my part and I'll do your part. And she was like, it was a horrific experience because you're literally working with someone who's showing you exactly the way that they want you to do the scene. It's bad scene partner 101. And she said that she went to it when they wrapped for the day. She got a call from him, not an apology, just like, hey, we're going to shoot the scene another, like, again. And, like, her...
What an awful phone call.
One of the other actors was irate that, like, she even went along with that. Because it was just... She gave up her own power. But, again, she was talking about, like, her consistent sort of traumatization in Hollywood. Oh, even God, in 2016, yeah. She was... felt coerced to expose herself to a casting director in an audition. So
that's recent.
And she was talking about how when you're a black girl, they really don't give a flying fuck about you. And that's Thandi fucking Newton. She was saying back in the day, it was just her and Halle going up for parts. It was just those two. So
it's so true. And also, like, let's not forget that Thandi Newton was friends with Tom Cruise. Like, yeah.
They did interview with the... She was in Interview with the Vampire.
And he brought her in because they were friends. So, like, this is someone that she actually trusts and has a relationship with. Yeah. And then he's shitty to her on set like that. Yeah. Like, that's...
And that was actually really revelatory. If you think that was, like, what, 2000s when that came out? And she was
90s.
A woman of color. Oh, yeah. A woman of color as the, you know, female lead in an action film. I mean, Vanessa Williams was the only person. Vanessa Williams was like the only other person who in Eraser with Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was a huge sort of, you know, between. And maybe I got to check the dates. Maybe I don't think.
Maybe it was 2000s.
Strange Days came after that, so I think Vanessa Williams might have hit the glass ceiling with that.
Man, my timeline's all whacked out.
I mean, the 90s
but I do remember that Mission Impossible. I was very excited that Thandi Newton was in it.
It might have been 1998. It was close. It was if it was high 90s, low 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I always have a theory that the last 4 years and the first 4 years of the decades are basically their own mini decade.
Mm-hmm.
Like 1988 to 1992, that's the same.
Oh, yeah, I agree. You because, know? Like, you see, like, a lot of the fashions and the, you know, I think, like, Saved by the Bell, like, it just is all kind of very 80s, 90s blur, you know?
Right, whereas, like, 1998 to, like, 2001, that's...
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, you know, TRL. I only have...
I know.
Do you notice how all of my timelines were pop cultural reference? Like, that's
why we do this podcast, James.
Okay. I want to see, get your cancel button ready, and we're going to see if we're going to press it.
Beep, beep, you're canceled.
We haven't even said what we're maybe canceling.
A beep, beep. Okay, let's do it. I was excited.
Let's see. And listen, I've talked about this on the podcast. I'm all for, like, when it's really important things or actual human beings, like, taking a breath and seeing if it's worth canceling. But this just seems like douchey people, and I'm like, okay.
I'm ready to cancel.
So... Cards
it's
against
like deleting an email.
So, which I'm bad at. Oh my God.
See,
I need you to...
I will get rid of you and then I'll be like, oh no.
I have 30,000 unread emails
I know. Your emails freak me out. They give me panic attacks.
I have 96 unread text messages.
All right. Readers, one day I was talking to James and he legit showed me his phone because we were doing Zoom. Get that off my screen. He's doing it to me now. I'm literally turning into a giant swollen hive looking at it.
On the text messages. Listen, if I respond to your email or text message,
I know.
It's a blessing. Like,
you're special.
Yeah, you're very special. You're a diamond in the rough.
Mine is zero. I have to get it down to zero. To the point where even if it's something, I just have to click in it so the bubble goes away.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Erotic.
Okay, so Cards Against Humanity. Like,
yes.
So
The
fun game that like I've definitely enjoyed playing at a party, drunk with my friends, but I'm usually playing with like me and ladies and gays. So like it's got
comfort.
It's not, yeah, I'm not playing with, you know, George from Frat USA.
Accountings.
Yeah, totally. So apparently, so Cards Against Humanity, there's this information coming out about the culture behind it. And
let me just quickly recap for anybody who has decided to wake up from under a rock. Cards Against Humanity is a game where you get a deck of cards, somebody puts a card out, and you have to put an applicable card to it. So like, and whoever has the funniest response to the card wins that card, and whoever has the most cards at the end of the round wins. Is that a good explanation?
Yeah, that's about right. And sometimes
they're raunchy.
The idea is the tagline, it's a card game for horrible people, and you want to go like the raunchier the better, right? And yeah, so it's just interesting because it's sort of like a new world that we're kind of sort of living in, or, you know, been in, or just, I guess for me, I've just had such a different experience because I've only played with like a safe space of people.
Well, let me tell you, I have not.
Oh.
I've played with people that have been awkward. I've played with people I have not known well. Mm. I've played with people that I do know well. And there's always a line.
Interesting.
Everybody has a line. There's always a line. And somebody always crosses it during my experiences. And everybody gets tense and weird.
Wow.
Like, I've had fun ones.
Yeah.
But I've definitely been in more times out of 10.
I mean, my only difficult time with party games is playing Taboo when Chelsea dropped the N-word.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
As in, the clue was it's a word that most people don't like, and she just said it with all the veracity of the mother of dragons. And
the ERs as possible.
Yep.
Yeah, no, Cards Against Humanity, I've recently, not even recently, I would say probably in the last 2 years, I don't want to play
it. It's on your no-fly zone. You're like, done, fair.
I don't like it.
So apparently, Max Temkin, who I believe is a black guy, who has essentially alleged that they're just the culture at Cards Against Humanity is just terrible. Like, their boss is abusive. He'd harass people, berate them, even fire employees if they were to upset him. Mm-hmm. Apparently, this guy also was alleged that, I guess, they wanted to use the N-word as one of the responses or answers that you could put in.
And it's literally the N-word. Too,
the N-word, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because, like, if you're playing the game, it could be like, Lindsay Lohan always rubs herself with, and then you'd fill in the blank. And it'd be like,
and somebody can put down
the N-word or something.
Yeah. Or like, you know, your neighbor's leprechauns. A tampon.
Yeah. So anyway, so there was even just like cards that have been removed, that there was like, you know, rape jokes, all these. I guess I had just like a filtered version because like had not been my experience with Cards Against Humanity at all.
There's some bad ones in there.
So, but the article I was reading was like, are we really surprised that this game that is dubbed like for horrible people, like, are we surprised that this is where it is? And it puts me in the same boat as, you know, like South Park, where, or even, you know, Avenue Q. I think it's time to put those things in a sort of bubble where they thought we were where we weren't. They thought that we were in a place of post-racial healing, misogyny is done. We can make jokes. We can laugh at, you know, when they say like, oh, I'm equal opportunist. I make fun of everybody, but not every
like, great.
But that's assuming that everybody has equity and equality. And so
you
can't punch down, right? Like you're punching down. And
if you're making fun of everybody, then you're just an asshole.
Well, and who says these white guys get to be the authority in all these issues about, you know, race and gender and sexuality?
Oh, one thing that the article talks about, and he also wrote in his own Medium piece, he fought back against the N-word and card.
Oh, yeah.
And they fought back against him, some of the higher ups, to the point where they started critiquing his behavior and essentially got him checked into a mental rehab.
Like,
I know.
That's the culture of it's disgusting. And
it's bad.
We just like, you know what? I don't have time. I didn't have time before. I definitely don't have time now. I am running late for a very important date, and it's called equity. Get this racist shit out of my face. I don't have time. So that's, you know what? I'm happy to just...
Exactly.
I'm happy to play Ellen DeGeneres' version. Well, maybe she's canceled too. Oh, man. But Ellen DeGeneres on the House Party app, they have chips and guac. And it's like it's more apples to apples than Cards Against Humanity. But you play go back to apples to apples. Y'all need to stop being so nasty and
You can have fun
pushing the buttons, and you can still be like a little clever in apples to apples.
Right.
It's more clever. You're right. Time to go back
James,
to basics.
James, that's the thing. That's what I want to say. Like, Cards Against Humanity is funny in a stupid way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be
smart,
funny.
Well, you
got to
be drunk for Cards Against Humanity. I feel
I can't play it sober.
Otherwise, you're like, and that's a good sign that if you can't do something sober, why are you doing it? Something's
wrong
with
it. Last
time
I played Cards Against Humanity, guess who was pregnant and guess how everybody else was drunk.
No.
It was awful.
That sounds like my seventh circle of hell.
With family members.
No. It keeps getting worse.
Who aren't my family.
No.
Like, you know, in-laws.
This is, a neck ache. Clutching my pearls.
It was rough.
Jesus be with you.
I know. It was rough. But I do feel like you can be, and they, you know, to their credit, nothing terrible happened during that time. Like, everybody was great behavior, having fun. It was just awkward.
Sure. And I bet, like, you're a little bit, you see, with alcohol, it takes the edge off a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
You didn't have anything to take the edge off. You just got baby around inside of you.
Right. Like, I was just bone cold sober talking about sexually explicit stuff with people that I'd never want to talk about. Because, like, for me, my line is not sexually explicit stuff. It could be for other people, but I'll talk about a penis and vagina, you know, whatever. That's funny to me because, you know, they're weird. But it's the racist stuff for me. Yeah. That's my line personally.
Right.
And there have been times where I've played the game and somebody will throw down. I'll be the only black person in the room.
Yeah.
And someone will throw down big black cock because that's on one of the cards.
It is. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And see, this goes back to something like a few different things. One, people need to have a diverse group of friends, because that's what happened to me when I was at the party and the girl threw down the N-word in Taboo.
I know, which is like, what are you doing?
Yeah, and it was just so easy. It was like 10 seconds into guessing. And
itching to say it.
It's just on the tip of her tongue. And so again, I was the only, you know, diverse person there in the room. So it's already putting me in a spot. It's not enough to have one black friend at this point. You need to have at least two. Like, you gotta upgrade it. Like, it's, you know, what are you doing with your life? And then two, like, Cards Against Humanity, and I think there was a queer woman of color also who had a very difficult time working at the company as well. And it's like, every company benefits from diversity because there can be someone. It's possible that game can also be fun, pushing the edge to the limits without having to really be overly offensive, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You're not trying to be like a scandalo. You're just trying to be like, ooh, you said that.
Tea penis.
Yeah, like, you want the tea to be warm, not scalding.
I love that. Yeah, it's a lot. I'm at a party. Well, also too, finally, we've been saying this for years, and it's like, it's sad that it took this, the incidents of multiple black people being killed again and again and again for this to happen. But it looks like, you know, the Washington.
The racist name.
Yes, I'm not even going to say it. A lot of the sports teams.
The Washington racist.
Yeah, the Washington racist and the, what is it? Or the Washington foreskins, as I like to call them. They're changing their name. A lot of the teams that have like indigenous people names as their sports team mascots are finally changing them. One of the teams used to be, I forget which one, used to be the Spiders. And then they changed it to like something racist instead. Like,
just keep the spiders.
Spiders are cool. It's weird, the spider's gonna get you.
The spider's like, gonna get you.
Isn't that like, ooh, that's intimidating? And then it'd be a cute little mascot because it'd be like a little dancing spider with all these legs.
I mean, that's a little cutesy. Don't you think it would probably be like some buff ass spider? Like, not some tap dancing spider with a top hat. Like, who? That's not intimidating.
Sorry, I come from my dancer's background. I'm focused,
I know. You're like some cute little spider. No, this is football.
I'm focused on the cheerleaders and what their halftime routine is going to be.
I know. You want them in like those. I'm imagining those fake arm outfits where they have like four arms on each side and they're just like,
oh, that's
for two.
That is exactly it. I'm even thinking like some other extra puppeteers dressed in black.
I know you're ready. You are ready.
You're right. But also could be, they could go, well, we have options. We're brainstorming here. It could be also just like super buff with all these extra buffed arms.
Ooh. I just like how buff your voice gets too. It's like you verbally.
I can't just
get
be like, who they buff? It gotta be buff.
Have a lot of problems.
How do you juggle your holds at the library?
How do you decide what to read next?
What do you do when you find out an author you love is a huge trash baby?
I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara.
And we're the hosts of Reading Glasses.
We're here to solve all your reader problems and along the way, help you figure out
your reader wheelhouse,
which are the things that will absolutely make you pick up a book. Our listener favorites tend to be magic and a woman on a journey.
And also birds for some reason.
Your reader doghouse.
Yeah, that's the things that'll make you avoid a book.
Ugh, love triangles stress me out so much. Reading Glasses.
Every Thursday on MaximumFun.org.
Speaking of things that are getting buff.
Yeah, what else is getting buff?
Hamilton, Was that a trick?
Buffered on Disney Plus. Ooh, see, I hook you up.
You saved me, Leia. Look at us. We are just Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen hanging out.
Who's who?
Well, you know, don't look at
me
like that.
I'll be Scottie.
Scottie's okay. Great. You don't want to be Michael
Jordan.
You know what? Michael Jordan gets too much, like when you get that much spotlight, you fly that close to the sun, you get burned. I don't want that for you.
You know what? I'm coming back in to help you. And then I come back out.
You're not Dennis Rodman.
I support you. Well, Dennis Rodman was kind of an opposition.
That's true. Yeah.
We are partners. I am here to support you.
I'm glad you're not a Dennis Rodman.
Give you a little layup.
Coming in disrupting shit.
I know.
Knocking things over.
I need to go on a cocaine binge in Las Vegas right now. Actually, maybe I am like Dennis Rodman because I was
here
for a while. We were here. Okay. We were hanging out. We were doing this podcast. And then I was like, I got to go.
Oh, yeah. It's true. I need a Scottie in my life, not a Dennis. That's giving me anxiety right now.
I like that.
I can't, for whatever reason, I can't think of any of the words, but like, oh, I'm not going to miss my shot. I'm not going to miss my shot. Hamilton. I keep wanting to be like Hamilton. Okay. No, Hamilton. That's not a song.
Do you want to hear my Lin-Manuel Miranda impression?
Yeah.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Just you wait. Just you wait. That's it.
Ooh, that's good.
That's good.
Look, okay, Scotty, you set me up. I'm going to also keep it in. We're going to talk about the Hamilton. Oh, I can't really do it. He's like the thing where he's like
Alexander Hamilton,
and you know what you want to do, and I'm ripping off Biggie right here, and I'm just doing the raps right here, and I got a little bit of a high pitch, but you don't even know what you're doing, and what I'm saying, I'm gonna teach the history, and I'm going over slavery. You're gonna beep out my F bombs, Disney Plus.
That's good. That's not bad.
Okay, hey, sign me up. Okay,
all right. Okay, James. Real quick, I have to tell you about my journey with Hamilton.
Yes. Had you seen it before?
Yes. So,
oh, you'd already seen it.
Oh yeah, I've seen it.
Girl, so you teach it because this is my first. I lived in New York for 5 years. Still could not get a ticket because it was like sold out and super expensive.
Yeah,
so.
I know. People fucking loved it. Mm-hmm. Okay, ready?
Yes.
So my journey was, it came out, it was big deal. I was like, this is hella nerdy. I don't give a shit about it. Leave me alone. And then people are like, it's so good, Nick. You gotta listen to the music. And I'm like, I hate listening to musicals because I'm missing all the middle portions.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
like, no, the whole thing is sung. Right, and yeah. I was like, okay. So I bought it and then I put it on my little earphones and I started to garden in the backyard sobbing.
Oh yeah.
Start sobbing. Mm. And I'm like, oh my God, this is really good.
Yeah.
Flash forward. Trump is elected. Mm. We're all deep in that shit. Mm. And I go, fuck Hamilton. These mm-hmm. are all fucking slave owners. Why am I excited about this? The presidents are stupid. I hate this.
Yeah.
Then it comes around and I was like, you know what? What's a good Mother's Day gift?
You are the daughter of the year. You took your mama to, or did you just take you? Because you also
No,
a mother.
I took her. Okay. I took her fourth row.
Aneke, I love you. You're so great.
I'm a good daughter. I'm a good daughter.
Wow, I can't wait to see what you end up doing for podcast co-host day.
Remember, I'm Dennis Rodman. Cocaine! Gotta get out of here!
Damn it. Oh, God. Come back, Scotty. Be Scotty. Oh, that's amazing.
Okay, so
fourth row. Oof.
Fell in love with it again.
Of course.
It was beautiful. It was so good.
Yeah.
Watched it recently, and then now all the conversations going on, which we're going to talk about.
Yes.
Watched it again on TV. It was still good, but it's like, I'm conflicted, James. I don't know how to feel.
Well, this is my first time. I did not listen to the soundtrack. I only once in my life have I ever listened to a soundtrack before seeing something, and that was with Rent. And Rent is kind of the same thing. I actually didn't feel like I missed out on any plot lines because they pretty much sing everything. Because I'm the same way. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't want to miss out the story. I also don't want to like spoil anything for myself. And I was just gripped watching it on Disney Plus. I'm glad that I had the experience that I had because I just got to watch it with just like fresh eyes.
Yeah.
I didn't know that like Disney had bleeped out the several F-bombs that, which to make up for that, I'm going to be like, fuck, 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 fuck. And you can just splice those in next time you're watching. I
just
say Aladdin.
Your voice.
Fuck. Hamilton. Fuck. Just fuck. Play this along and then you'll get the full experience.
Yeah.
So, going back to the roots of it, of why I'm like, whoa, this is amazing, is sort of the sort of essence of it. If you just sort of strip away all the things of it, it is amazing seeing people of color
Yes.
Being cast in these parts that we normally, how many times do I have to watch a fucking like colonial movie or a movie that takes place like even in 1917 where we don't exist? And so what I felt like the essence of it is saying, y'all, we've been here from the beginning and we're going to have, if we're going to have to like digest this historical information, well, you know, we're going to fucking tell the story. We're going to take the reins of it. Right.
And I like
I feel like it's a vehicle for it, you know. There's a lot of history and a lot of fucked up history. And I do understand that people are like, he's only got 2.5 hours to tell a story, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's only in Lin-Manuel Miranda, a lot of people are having issue that, again, a lot of these founding fathers that are featured in it were slave, like they had slaves, right? And but he does make a point that the third line that is said in the musical is slavery. And he says it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, just like that. Just like
that. So it's sort of like saying, like, understand that this is all happening. And listen, like, I was well aware watching it. I'm like, oh, yeah, slavery is absolutely the ether of it. And so but I feel like it was also, to me, it's sort of like getting to the roots and the essence of, I think, the idea of America. And I think that's why Black people really march and fight for this fucking country, because the idea of it is actually really dope. The idea of everybody being able to be free and have equality and equity is really dope. And that everyone, no matter your race, your religion, your gender, is entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Everyone is created equal. And I think what the musical also shows is how flawed they were. The this isn't a spoiler because this is just history, but like the affair that Hamilton has and the it's like, here it is, this brilliant man who is actually flawed. And I think, especially because we are in such a space of like cancel culture, so it's sort of like allowing space for people to be human and be flawed and to now. We take the torch. We take that of it and move it further. And I hope that in 20 years that there's a new musical. They should do like a Frederick Douglass musical or something. Like I would like to see.
Yeah, that'd be fascinating.
So I think it's sort of like, what can they tell in 2.5 hours? And the essence of it, I think, still resonates of like people of color telling the history of this country because we built this country.
Yeah, amen to that. Like, that mic drop to that. Like, seriously, because it's like, here's the other thing that I kind of want to say, and I don't care if people disagree with me or not, but I think that there's a lot of literal thinking right now. Mm. A lot of people are thinking very black and white, and things are very hyper aware, which is good, and that's the way that we need to think. But within the arts, we need to allow magical thinking.
Yes.
So the whole way he positioned it, he doesn't deny slavery was a thing. He brings it up. He talks about it in the musical.
Yeah.
But it's an allegory. And it's a very on the head out. It's not a vague allegory.
Not at
I mean,
all.
The song Immigrants, We Get Things Done is very much pointed to now. It's an allegory for the struggles of now. Also, King George is always played by a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's they're very much showing oppressors versus people who are fighting.
Right.
That's always clear. And let's not forget, and this is the thing that irritates me, that people are getting all up in arms about it. Let's not forget that this is employing so many people of color on stage.
Yep.
So many. The whole cast.
Yep.
With the exception of King George.
Yep.
And maybe like one or two of those weird dancers in spandex corsets.
Well, I think one of them went to my gym, but yes.
Okay. But you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody is a person of color, and there's the traveling cast, there's the understudies, there's the people who took over for the main cast.
Yeah.
This employed so many people of color, like you said, in roles that we never see ourselves in.
Yeah.
And I think that people... So the people who are arguing like, well, we shouldn't be putting this on a pedestal because of blah, blah, blah. Well, do you want to see us in slavery?
Yeah. Is that what I, because I it was also really
I'm tired
great.
Of that.
I am too. It was great to see, because I know it is existing. Right. And it's sort of using the imagination, and people forget like theater's not literal. Right. Like you said, it's literally magical realism that is happening before our eyes. And it's sort of, to me, it's a reimagining of these stories. Like, I could see their connections to slavery. And also, too, it's sort of like, you know, that Hamilton did come from, he was born in the Caribbean, right? So
there's,
so I'm imagining I have people from the Caribbean. So I'm able to see myself in this story that I would normally not feel connected to. It's just a bunch of white people on that stage. I would feel so disconnected.
Disconnected.
So what it did is I felt so empowered watching Hamilton, of like understanding the purpose of this country, my own power and ability. Like it's mm-hmm. such an inspiring story. And it's so important, I think, for this story to be told now, because you just see what's happening in the world right now, and that each of us has power and responsibility to step up in shaping this democracy, you know?
Right. Right. And also seeing people of color, and I'm using that because everybody's represented.
Oh God.
Like
yeah.
Philippa Sue is Asian. We have Latinos, yes. We have black people. We have everybody represented. So it's seeing people of color not pigeonholed too. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. We get to stretch our acting into realms telling stories that aren't reserved for us to tell.
Yep.
So and if we were to tell something that was about somebody of that time, it would always be kind of oppression based because mm-hmm. it's that sort of thing. But those are important stories as well too. I'm not discrediting that.
Right.
I do think I just hope that people can understand that and see what it is, and it doesn't get like sacrificed,
yeah,
you know, and
totally.
Beat up. But I also hope that the white audiences, the older white audience that embraced it so much, understand that allegory as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
You know, understand, not just think like, oh, it's about Hamilton and that's it. But it's not, you know?
Right.
Like,
and I think like it should be the conversation starter. You know, mm-hmm. you shouldn't just watch Hamilton and be like, okay, that was done. It let it be the jumping off point to unpack the many layers that are involved in it. So I'm going to ask everyone to put their cancel buttons down on this one. Do not cancel Hamilton. We need Hamilton.
We need Hamilton.
Go make your version then. Like, make the sequel. Do what you need to
do. Yeah.
So the job market is a mess right now. Oh yes, in the year 2020, a lot is going on. And whether you're looking for a new opportunity, you're like, I'm trying to get a new job, you're trying to upgrade the current job you got by getting a new promotion, business skills are gonna help you take that next step. And there's a lot going on. Pandemic, coronavirus, civil unrest, but never let a crisis go to waste. Some of you might be looking to level up your skills or pivot, or taking this as an opportunity to pivot into a new direction or launch yourself into a new way of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Hey, it's what the founding fathers wanted, right? Follow your dreams, collect your coin. So if that's you, then this might be the answer. So the University of Toronto Rotman School of Management, it is one of the best schools in Canada and the world. And look, some countries are shutting their borders. So if you're here in the US, this might be as close to Canada as you're gonna get for a while, you know? And if you're already in Canada, then you probably already know that it is ranked number 17 for open enrollment executive education by the Financial Times. And in just 3 weeks, you're going to learn how to work collaboratively across divisions, develop your business skills, and network with a global group of early to mid-career professionals like yourself. We're heading into a new world, and you can help shape what that new world looks like with all your new dope business skills from Rotman School of Business. So if you live in the US, don't forget that the price is in the Canadian dollars. So just make sure that the exchange rate is what you want it to be, meaning the US dollar price, it's gonna be lower. So it's gonna look like you're spending even more money than you really are. Listen, in the age of coronavirus, everything counts. It's all about the Benjamins. But I guess they wanna be Benjamins because it's Canadian dollars. It's all about the Justins. So visit uof.me/maxfun. Classes start August 10th, 2020. So start your application to save your seat. Once again, that's uof.me/maxfun. Rotman, here's where it changes.
Back.
It's an Anarchist Corner. She's gonna give it to you right now.
Yes.
Our local librarian. She ain't staring. She ain't marrying you.
Oh.
But she's gonna give you the knowledge, the power,
Hamilton.
And you're gonna do it. Hamilton, up now, up and down. Ooh, they got just got
so
the flow
good.
In me. Move over to Lin-Manuel Miranda.
You did. I mean, it is James Arthur
Miranda
coming at
I
you.
I want his last name. I need the brand. I need the brand.
You create your own brand.
Okay, thanks, Gypsy.
Okay, Yeah, no, I am Mama Rose.
Thanks, Kris Jenner, Mama Rose Lohan. Ooh, that's the mom.
Ooh, that's a, ooh, yikes. Okay, so we are going to be talking about spouses because
I feel like they should have put a ring on it.
Hey, you know what? I was inspired by this Instagram post that's been kind of circulating the gram lately. It's by this one woman, Stavona Elm Rogers. She is a writer, educator, and orator, which is like,
yeah, ooh, she that's
okay. She'd be talking.
I mean, that's kind of us. We're orators.
Yeah, we're orators. Mm, sure,
a fancier word.
I'm orating in this you corner.
Okay, she is.
Oh, she is. She also advocates for Black culture and womanhood. So I highly suggest that you guys give her a follow. It is DV Elm. That is her her handle on Instagram. She does a lot of history stuff, and then you can follow some of her work. So basically, whenever they like forward it, mm-hmm. you know, her post, and it was
a repost on Instagram.
Yeah, a repost. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Reforward it. I'm like, are we emails? Now I'm thinking about my 30,000 emails.
Oh, Granny Neke is back on the podcast.
You mean repost?
Am I the oldest co-host that you have on this show?
No, I mean...
Okay, good. Ha ha, young!
Oh, yeah, you're not. I have some 40-year-olds. Like, they begin okay, up good. There.
That's good, though. Babies. You got to keep it diverse in age, mm-hmm. too. All right. So the story that was reposted that I really liked is about Frederick Douglass's first wife, Anna Mary Douglas.
Yes.
Okay. You know what? And she reposted this because it's like, everybody's posting Frederick Douglass, especially on July 4th, because of his what
he was
is
like, fuck this holiday.
Speech. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, what is the 4th of July to the slave mm-hmm. or something? That's his speech that he did. And there was a lot of heartwarming things that like his descendants repeated it. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda, David Diggs, he recited it. Like there's a lot of great things that
sidebar, David Diggs, who is in Hamilton. Right?
Mm-hmm. He's from
Oakland.
Well,
people, when I was living in New York, would get him confused for me. There's a woman that I realized in my barista, she thought that I was him, and she just was like, oh my God, I love you on like Hamilton. Or like, I thought she was talking about my one-liner on that show that I did. And so she was not talking about that. And it took me a while to realize, oh, I think that's who she thinks I am. And I had one girl when I went to go vote, she couldn't believe it was me either. And I thought maybe she had seen one of my, I don't know, Marvel or something. And so she's like, can I get a picture?
James.
I'm like, sure.
You took a picture as David Diggs.
I thought she thought I was
different.
Me.
I'm sorry. You guys look different.
But he does play parts that I'm like, oh, that's a part that I would play.
Oh, okay.
Like I'm mm-hmm. Blackish, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Rainbow's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, David, this corner... So basically, this corner, it was inspired by that post because it reminded me how much spouses work with their partners. Mm. Like, sidebar, fucking Einstein's wife helped him develop E equals MC squared. But we don't know her name. We don't know who she is. We don't know
her name.
Yeah. So like all of these spouses, they work with their partners either by supporting them. Like Stephen King's wife basically ran the house while he was on cocaine binges writing horror.
Okay.
Or they're their silent partners, like how Einstein was, Mrs. Einstein, where she actually helped him. They collaborated on it. So I wanted to give some props to the spouses of some notable Black figures in history because their stories are fucking interesting.
I love this already. Let's do it. Say their name, say their name.
Okay, so the first one I'm going to do, and a lot of you probably already read this, but I'm just going to repeat it because it deserves repeating. I'm going to read Stevie Elm's post about fucking Frederick Douglass's wife, Anna Murray Douglas, because this is just too hilarious. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Every year on the 4th of July, 4th of July, we get Frederick Douglass's
like
quote, and I get V annoyed because his ass was only free because of a Black woman he almost never writes about, which is wild because my nigga wrote a lot. Anna Murray Douglas is his first wife who was born a free woman. She used her sewing gifts and funds to help him escape slavery, which was risky AF. She then used her funds to get them started as a couple. She birthed 5 children and continued to run run their household for 44 years while Frederick traveled and grew popular in abolitionist circles. During this time, he gained new friends, mostly white women, who critiqued Anna because they felt that she was too uneducated to be his wife. He initially chose Anna because she reminded him of freedom and home. Sound familiar? Okay. Balancing their money, the house, and the Underground Railroad stop, raising their children, and dealing with his disrespectful ass friends eventually threw Anna into a depression. She died from a stroke. 2 years later, Frederick remarried a white woman, Helen, a direct descendant of the Mayflower, and she gets way more airtime because he defends their love publicly. So to this day, I'm here to clearly rant, LOL, and tell the damn truth. Anna Murray Douglas was that deal. She was a bomb black woman, abolitionist, who made it all possible. But we aren't all. But aren't we always? Today, her efforts will not be overshadowed by a black man and a white woman. Thank you for coming to my Moesha journal.
Ooh, Moesha.
So doesn't that get your whistle wet?
Oh, I mean, it is slobbering. I don't know. Okay. What's the word for juicy?
Juicy.
Okay, it's that. That is so, yeah, that is so, that's so fascinating and so interesting.
I hadn't known about her. 44 fucking years married and supported this man. Okay.
All I have is, like, for whatever reason, I just hear the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack playing or something. Like,
that's the background to all of this.
I'm not gonna cry. Yes. I'm not gonna cry. I'm not gonna shed one tear. And just lighting his shit on fire.
That is the theme of this corner. These
women,
stories.
I would like to do a Waiting to Exhale now. I don't even know the rest of the cast, but like with these women, together. Like.
Oh, it would be a good soap opera because just hold on to your butt hole, James. This is so good. Okay. So we're going to be talking about Booker T. Washington first.
Uh-oh. All right? And he already problematic.
Had two wives.
Oh,
and we're going to tell those two. No, wait a minute. He had three wives.
Oh,
and we're
going to
tell the story about Booker T. Washington.
Wait a minute. Oh, there's another one. Just found her over here.
I know. Okay, so let's go in order. So we got a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah.
First wife of Booker T. Washington was named Fannie Smith Washington.
Okay, Fannie. All right.
Fannie Smith Washington was a young woman when she attended the day program at a local school in Malden, West Virginia, where both her and Booker T grew up. So she was around 80 to 90 with, like, they both attended around 80 to 90 pupils in this day program. Okay, so she was super smart. Her intellect and determination attracted the attention of her teacher at the time, Booker T. Washington.
Okay, hey, teacher.
Who was
teacher.
Only 2 years older than her. So it's like babies teaching babies.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, I'm like, is she just an old student or is he a young teacher? What's
young teacher.
Okay.
Probably one of those weird, you know, when it's like you're a senior and you're 18 and then you have that young, fresh out of college teacher who's like 22.
Oh,
I don't know.
I remember.
It was the turn of the, it was the 1800s. Things were weird.
I mean, age was definitely nothing but a number back then. Like,
scandal.
Married at 12.
Okay, so Booker T. Washington, her teacher, and also her senior of 2 years, he paid special attention to the students he considered to have promise and often prepared them to enter and attend the Hampton Institute in Hampton, Virginia. And they, like, joked around and called it the Booker Washington Boys, or were the kids that he were
the
able
Booker
to
Boys.
The Booker Boys. Fannie was the only woman in that group at the time.
Okay.
So
the Booker
Fannie's
Boys and Fannie.
Yeah, Booker. It doesn't help
sounds
that
like
Fannie means vagina in England.
I but, know. Yeah, okay. It sounds like a comic strip.
I know, the Booker Boys and Fannie. I mean, that would be a fun one. Okay, so Fannie's mother, Cecilia, she was unenthusiastic about the marriage between Booker T. Washington.
She was
because
like,
she was. Yes.
Clap.
Because she was unimpressed because he was poor.
Oh, snap. So Fannie came from money.
No, they just were both poor, and Cecilia was like,
was
I want,
like,
you to be better.
Where are we
than
going
this?
With this? I want more for you than I got. Fair, okay.
Exactly. So the new couple moved to Tuskegee, Alabama, where Washington had accepted the position of a principal of a new school for African-American children the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Fanny also immediately joined the faculty of the fledgling Tuskegee Institute and is credited for broadening the curriculum for female students in developing the school's home economic program. So first of all, we've never heard of Fanny, and she fucking helped develop the Tuskegee Institute, which is what Booker T. Washington is famous for.
Right. Little do we know, peek behind the curtain, it's Fanny doing all the fucking
exactly.
work.
Exactly.
What you doing back there? You stay back there, Fanny.
I know. But luckily, so not luckily, but okay. Booker T. Washington described their symbiotic working relationship and Fanny's dedication to the school's early stages, stating, "From the first, she most earnestly devoted her thought and time to the work of the school. It was completely one with me in every interest and ambition."
So he did give her credit. There's a writing, there's an article where he offhandedly mentioned, Fanny, she's been there.
She works well. We work well together. Okay, so on May 4th, 1884, Fanny Smith Washington died suddenly of unknown causes. This is sad because they were only married for 2 years.
Woo! First of all, they did a lot then in 2 years. Started an institute together.
Yes.
And that's sad because it's like, who knows what else she could have done. And I mean, history fucking sucks of like who tells it, but maybe that's why like we don't hear her name as much because they only had 2 years of like work together.
I know. Well, they had 2 years of work together, but it's sad because they grew up together. Remember, they're like childhood friends. So they were together for a long time.
That breaks my heart.
They moved there together. She died. They have a kid and then she dies. It's sad. Okay.
Was
so
it shortly
he's
after the kid was born?
I don't know. I need to look up the days.
Maybe like preeclampsia or something.
Maybe could have been. Mm. It was sad.
Yeah.
So she died and he's devastated.
Of course.
And then along comes Olivia A. Davison.
Oh, hello. You know, I'm just imagining Kerry Washington just scuffling by in her big boof dress.
Okay, so Davidson began teaching at the age of 16 in Ohio. So I guess they just have young people teaching.
I'm behind. Like, she's like, I got this. I know what I'm doing. Teach. Move over.
Okay.
But you know, like, I mean, life expectancy wasn't that. Well, this isn't that long ago. Because there was.
Yes, it was. It was like over 100 years ago.
So, I mean, you waste no time. Like, you're maybe
going
to live to
30.
You're
like, I got
to
get my life going.
No time to be like, what am I going to do? Nope.
No.
I like teaching. This is what I'm doing. Let's go.
You're going to die early. So, get some work done. Yes. Okay, so she started teaching at the age of 16 in Ohio. By the time that she was 18, she moved to Mississippi to teach free people and their children. So already 18 doing shit, right? So in 1874, she became a sixth grade teacher in the New Clay Street School in Memphis, Tennessee. Her sister Margaret was also a teacher there, and her brother Joseph also lived and worked in the city. So the three of them, they're like, we're siblings. We're going to go move to Tennessee. And then 4 years later, her brother Joseph was murdered by the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, God.
At a time of violence to suppress black voting. Familiar.
Sounds familiar.
1878.
I can't even say everything old is new again. Everything old is still happening.
Still happening. Persistent. Everything old is persistent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. At one point, though, Olivia, she, and this is really cool, she started teaching a group of Native American men who had been enrolled at that school after being released as prisoners of war from the United States fort in Florida. They were warriors from the Plains tribe who had been captured in, like I said before, the Indian War. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So she made a point to educate them. So Davison was hired by Booker T.
Washington.
She
was teaching all the kids. The original Miss Frizzle, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Young Miss Frizzle. New Miss Frizzle.
She's young.
So she was hired by Booker T. Washington as a teacher and an assistant principal of the Tuskegee Institute in 1881. Okay, so during this time, she too helped shape the Tuskegee Institute. So she's in there working with Booker T., working with Fanny. Mm-hmm. So they're all there creating the Tuskegee Institute together. So in 1886, she delivered a speech to the Alabama... What's going on?
I just had a... Did you watch the Madam C.J. Walker show on Netflix? I think Fanny is a character in it.
Is she?
I do believe she is. I need to cross-reference it, but I think that she is. Like, Booker T. Washington is in... Because she's trying to get his involvement and help and stamp of support.
Oh.
And I do believe... Because she's running... I think it's Fanny, and she's running with... A high roller group of like
I mean, these
black
are all
women.
Social. Yeah, these are like
they were socialites.
Black,
yeah, but, they were.
But bigger than socialists,
doing stuff,
I would say.
Yeah, but they're very particular, at least in this portrayal, and yours might be a little bit more accurate. But
okay. I'll have to check it out.
Although this is directed by Cassie Lemons.
I heard that there's some things that are a little smudged in it.
I mean, ain't nothing gonna be perfect, but...
I know.
Fair. Tiffany Haddish is singing.
You gotta make
it
interesting.
Fabulous. You do gotta... It definitely is like a draw. It's like a soap opera set in the world of Madam C.J. Walker, but I digress. Okay. But I think Fanny is in it.
I think
she's like, Fanny. She says, like, because Octavia Spencer gives, like, a speech, and she's like, look at your wives. Look at them. Back in the kitchen, making sandwiches. They're beautiful. They're learned. They're wise. Emmy.
Okay, all right.
Sorry.
Well, Fanny, we're moving on from Fanny. We're on Olivia right now.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah, remember, we're back at Olivia, the second one.
Sorry, I've been stuck on Fanny. I'm like, where do I know her?
I know. Okay, so back to Olivia. Remember, Olivia was a teacher at 16, 18. Now she's been hired by Booker T, and she's been working with Fanny and Booker T in 1881 to develop the Tuskegee Institute. She got really big and really notable. So to the point of in 1886, she delivered a speech to the Alabama State Teachers Association on the subject of how shall we make the women of our race stronger, where she asserted that African-American girls were the hope of the race and that the roads to the collective improvement of African-Americans depended on the development of its daughters, which is 1886. This is this is a pretty big deal.
Oh, yeah.
She ended up marrying Booker T. Washington in 1886 during that same year, and worked with him to continue to create, you know, the Tuskegee Institute.
Okay.
I mean, sad though, because then 3 years later in 1889, she died of tuberculosis.
Weird. His wives, once they get married, they don't last long.
I know. Let's move on to the third wife.
Okay. And it might have maybe been Olivia in there. All I know, there was somebody's prominent wife in the show.
All right. So, Booker T. Washington's third wife.
Oh, shit. Or maybe it's her. I need to look at the cast list.
He, you know, the first two women, boom, boom. But Margaret Murray Washington, she stuck around.
Okay,
she's
Margaret,
like,
you stay
around.
I'm not going to die. She's like, I'm a holder. I got shit to do. Maggie is here.
So Margaret Murray Washington is fascinating because she was one of 10 children born to a sharecropper and an Irish immigrant father. So an Irish immigrant father and an African American mother. So this is like this is in the 1800s,
right?
And this is like a non rape
like
situation,
not rape. Okay, yeah. We both literally came to the same conclusion. I'm like,
yeah. So I was like,
it's always very interesting to hear these stories that are about love and not rape.
I know,
because it's not common,
not common during this time at all. So her father died when she was 7. And the next day, she moved in to live with a Quaker couple by the name of Sanders.
Okay.
Already, fascinating story.
I love the Quakers. Like, I know. Am here for the Quakers.
Yeah, so they encouraged her to become a teacher, which was one of the few occupations available to women at the time. Obviously, all these ladies are teachers. So she was determined to further her teaching career. So by the age of 19, Murray enrolled in Fisk University, where she met Booker T. Washington. He regarded her as a model student.
Was he her teacher?
Yeah, I mean, no, I think he was like working with Fisk University at this point.
Oh, okay. I was like, well, he's at the school all the time. Where else is he going to meet, you know?
Here's a common thread. He's like, hey, you want to work for me?
Okay, there we go. All
which is number three. So she takes the position of, and I know you're going to like the name of this position, lady principal.
Oh my God, it's my favorite. I love anything with lady in front of it. Lady firefighter.
I know.
Lady dancer. Lady doctor.
So she became a lady principal.
Ninja.
And this is a scandalo. She became the lady principal, taking over for the dead wife.
Okay, yeah. So, I feel like, you know what, to me it sounds like from when that first wife died, he was trying to find that void, you know? That's probably why he worked so much, and then he just was trying to rekindle that magic.
I know. So by 1890, Murray was writing to Washington to express her deep feelings for him.
Okay.
And he proposed to her the following year after some hesitation. So he was a little bit like, no.
He's like, I've been here before.
I'm sad.
You're just going to die.
I can't
do this again.
So they were married in 1893. So they took their time.
Okay.
Margaret wrote Washington's speeches, and she helped her husband in expanding the school and traveled with him on tours and speaking engagements.
She was a speech writer. She was she was like his Gypsy Rose, Kris Jenner Lohan.
She was his Scottie Pippen.
She was right there. She was helping him out. She was doing this stuff. Right. So during her tenure as a lady principal of Tuskegee, she also created the Tuskegee's Women's Club and merged local organizations with women clubs to help improve the value and liberation of womanhood in African-American women in the Jim Crow South.
Okay, that's the one that's in Madam T.J. Walker.
Okay, so it's,
that is the one. It's Margaret Murray.
Okay.
Yes. Oh my God, it's so Margaret Murray, because that's exactly what she was doing. She was creating these clubs and organizations. And Madam T.J. Walker was trying to get like involved in the club, and she was like, get out of here. It was okay. But she eventually came around.
Okay, good.
Spoiler.
All right, so in 1895, she gave an influential speech titled Individual Work for the Moral Elevation at the First National Conference of the Colored Women of America. She's credited as co-founding the National Association of Colored Women in 1896. She founded country schools, taught women how to live and attend to their home, worked for the improvement of prisons, started the Mount Meg School for Boys and an industrial school for girls at Tuskegee, and she constantly worked for the betterment of poor and neglected. In 1912, she became the fifth president of the National Association of Colored Women, and the National Association of Colored Women, they did things like they helped women in the South help buy housing and open daycare to like help women get opportunities to go to work. In 1920, a National Association of Colored Women conference held in Tuskegee. The main topic of the agenda was lynching. Many of the recently founded anti-lynching organizations were in attendance, and they expressed their support in a bill that defined lynching as an act of murder. And Margaret co-headed this.
Wow.
So she was hugely anti-lynching, hugely just like an activist, full stop. All three of these women were dynamic, amazing women in their own right.
He didn't marry no duds. There was no
he did
ball
not.
And chain. It was like someone who helps, you know, when they say like you want to find your binary star that helps you to shine brighter, like
he did that.
He would not be where he is without finding that perfect running mate. And he was very fortunate that he found like three amazing ones.
Exactly.
I can't find one.
Give it time.
Okay.
I mean,
what Booker T got that I don't?
Well, let's
fair. All right.
Put a pin
run
in
your
that.
Race, James. Run your own race. Run
I
your
know,
own race.
No comparison, because get ready to hear the part that I'm
he
I'm
got
excited
a fourth wife.
No, we're going to move on to somebody else. We're going a little forward in time, but not okay. that much forward, just a little bit forward. We're going to talk about Marcus Garvey's wives.
Wives.
A Tale of Two Amys.
Uh-oh. Did he get confused?
Ready?
Okay.
Okay. So, Marcus Garvey, his first wife was named Amy Ashwood Garvey, obviously. Okay, so Amy Ashwood attended the Westwood High School for Girls in Trelawney, Jamaica. During this time, she met Marcus Garvey, who she helped co-found the Universal Negro Improvement Association in 1914. Remember, she's in high school. The UNIA was the most influential anti-colonial organization in Jamaica up until 1938. Its legacy lies in giving women an opportunity to be leaders and influence in the public sphere. At the age of 17, while in the UNIA, Amy Ashford wrote romantic letters to Marcus in which she said, "Our joint love for Africa and our concern for the welfare of our race urge us to immediate action." So already she's appointing herself as an equal
right.
to Marcus Garvey.
Yeah.
And this is in 1914. So
yeah. I mean, she was doing the Beyonce Jay-Z thing before that was even a thing.
Mm-hmm. So in 1914, this is the same. She's still a young little bippy helping him doing this. She assisted Marcus Garvey with the founding of the Negro World, which is a popular newspaper of the UNIA. Its purpose in being to connect people of African descent across all continents. Mm. So this is like uniting the whole Pan-African movement, which is what Marcus Garvey co-spearheaded.
Right.
So, and also the Negro World is, a lot of people look at it as like a great, like a monument into, you know, the time back then. Okay, so she organized a women's section of the UNIA in 1918, and then she moved to the United States, where she worked with Garvey's aide and secretary of the UNIA's New York City branch. In 1919, she was made secretary of the Black Star Line, a shipping line incorporated by Marcus Garvey, and became one of its first directors. They got married in 1919, and then the marriage quickly broke down. It ended in divorce in 1922. There's accusations of infidelity on both sides. There was lawsuits, countersuits, annulment. They were trying to do annulments, divorce, alimony, and also there was an accusation of bigamy, which we'll get into a little bit later.
Oh, snap. They were literally, any court thing that they could throw at it, they were like, get me out of this.
It was drama. And you will see why there was drama when we get in a little bit further. But I just want to talk about what Amy Ashwood was able to do in her lifetime, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So after her divorce in 1922, she moved to London and she continued being a Pan-African heroine. She struck up a friendship with Lapido Solanke, a Nigerian activist, and together they founded the Nigerian Progress Union. She supported West African student unions. In 1924, she returned to New York, where she produced comedies with her companion, Sam Manning, a Trinidadian calypso singer, who was one of the world's first pioneering black recording artist.
Love it.
So in 1934, she returned to London with Manning, opened up Social Club, which was a jazz club on Carnaby Street, and it became like a gathering for supporters of Pan-Africanism. She established the International African Friends of Abyssinia, the International African Service Bureau, and the London Afro Women's Center. In 1939, she went back to Jamaica, and she formed a political group called the J.A.G. Smith Political Party. It was short-lived, but still, you know.
Yeah, I didn't start a political party.
I know. All of this is insane. So during World War II, she founded a domestic science institute for girls in Jamaica. She got involved in the 5th Pan-African Congress in Manchester in 1945. She did a whole lot about freedom from British colonial rule for Jamaica. She just basically just like, even in 1943, she moved to Liberia for 3 years and struck up a relationship with the president.
I mean, she sounds like the world's Martin Luther King. Like, she's
amazing.
She wasn't just doing it for like one specific region. She was like doing it for black liberation around the world. Like, that is amazing. And this is the first time I'm hearing about her.
I know. In 1953, she went on a tour of the Caribbean. She visited Antigua, Aruba, Barbados, British Guiana, Dominica, all of these different places. She ended up going back to England after the 1958 Notting Hill race riots, which is something that I didn't know existed.
Okay, we'll put a pin in that one.
Yeah, basically, and when we hear race riot, let's call a spade. It's a massacre.
Right.
So basically, this one in England was a bunch of Afro-Caribbean immigrants were coming into the neighborhood and white people got mad and killed them. So that's short story short on that.
I wonder where America learned that from.
I know. So after that happened, Amy Ashwood was like, fuck you guys, I'm going to co-found the Association for Advancement of Colored People here in England.
Bring so it she over did that. There.
She toured the United States, returned to Jamaica in 1968, and died in Kingston at the age of 72. She squeezed out in 72 years.
Where was she born?
Jamaica.
Okay, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So seeing that she did a lot, that's why she was doing a lot of stuff with the Caribbean, and then also going back to England, be like, hey, y'all cut this shit out. This is what colonialism did. This is what racism is. Black people, you have power. Wake up, wake up, rise up, rise up.
Exactly.
Everything I say sounds like Hamilton.
You know what? You're inspired. Okay, just for the sake of time, let me just squeeze in this last one.
Okay, go for it.
The second Amy.
Okay? Uh-oh.
Because remember, first Amy Ashwood got divorced from Marcus Garvey in 1922. Okay, so second Amy. Amy Jacques?
Okay. Amy J.
Yeah, we'll say Amy J. Amy Euphemia J. Jacques, whatever. Was a part of a small minority of Jamaican youth to attend high school. It was believed at the time that 2% of youth in Jamaica attended high school. So the fact that she got in there was like, she's smart and she's upward mobility. Okay, her her political ideologies were derived as a direct result from her father. He urged her to read periodicals and newspapers to enhance her knowledge of the world. Upon graduating high school and receiving some of the highest honors of the time, she was recruited to work at a law firm. Her father said no. He was like, I don't want you to work with all of these men. Her dad died that year, and the lawyer proceeding over his estate was like, to her mom was like, hey, can't you work for me? And the mom was like, yeah, okay.
Because dad was gone. So it's like,
dad's
hey,
dead. So she's like, I'm going to go work for some lawyers.
Dad's gone.
So she worked in the legal system for 4 years. She came to the United States in 1918, and she assumed the role of Marcus Garvey's private secretary and worked alongside of him in the UNIA.
I'm just connecting like there was infidelity on both sides.
Okay, ready? Just ready. Hold on. During this time, she was Amy Ashwood's roommate and maid of honor in their wedding to Marcus Garvey.
This is a nightmare.
The two friends were said to have started their relationship back in Jamaica. So they were like old. The two Amys were friends. Back. After Amy Ashworth's divorce from Marcus Garvey in 1922, Amy Jacquees married Marcus Garvey that same very year.
So that means, I mean, that doesn't just happen. It's not like he like, oh, I got a divorce and now I'm going to, oh, I found you. No.
I know. Here's the drama.
Okay.
Many historians are confused about whether or not the two were having an affair. On one hand, Marcus Garvey's first spouse, Amy Ashwood, claimed that she and Garvey were seeing each other behind her back. Ashwood speaks of infidelity and mistrust when describing the pain and humiliation that she felt. On the other hand, Marcus and Amy J. claimed that they had no contact prior to the divorce of his first wife. They claimed that they had a mutual respect for one another, but their contact was limited strictly to work and friendly chatter. Private secretary. Ashwood makes the claim that she left Marcus for a period of separation in the summer of 1921 when she allegedly discovered that he and Amy J were living together.
I mean, my secretary, who's your best friend, maid of honor, I mean, she just needed a place to stay. No.
I know. And here's the other thing. So the divorce was finalized in June of 1922. Those two got married in July of 1922.
That's not even a full month. I mean,
they're scandalous.
The ink is still wet on the divorce papers. Like, hasn't even dried.
I know.
That doesn't just like, in those 30 days, you just realized that you two needed to be with each other. Lord. I mean, listen, things happen, but like, don't
not
you lie.
Not like that.
Don't you lie to me, Marcus Garvey.
I know. Okay,
I know where your park is in Harlem.
Scandal aside. Several months after marrying Marcus Garvey, Amy J. began editing Volume 1 of the Philosophy and Opinions of Marcus Garvey, a compilation of Marcus's writings and speeches. Her initial purpose in editing this journal was to provide a means for the general public to form their own opinion about Marcus Garvey and without the stigma provided by biased sources at the time. Amy became the face of the UNIA and represented all of the women of the organization. In her book, Garvey and Garveyanism, Amy alleges that a significant amount of Garvey's speeches were a direct result of her own work. He would basically ask her to go look through all of the different articles and newspapers at the time, present him with the stories, and then he would write the speeches from that. So she basically did a lot of the heavy-duty work. So the two traveled and spoke at engagements together, and Amy was such an amazing speaker that during an event in New York, Amy was not a part of the program, but the audience was so inspired by her previous speeches and published work that when Garvey went up there to speak, they chanted, "We want Mrs. Garvey."
Okay,
even though she was not scheduled to speak.
Not for you.
So they allowed her to speak. And then when Marcus Garvey went up there to speak again, he was like, "I'm glad that my wife is my wife and not my rival," because they liked her more than him. So basically,
it's kind of like when you go to a Beyonce and Jay-Z concert.
Yeah, you're like, get Jay-Z out of here. We want Beyonce.
Yeah.
But Amy was forced to assume the lead role of the UNIA when Marcus was convicted of mail fraud in June, June 1923, less than a year after their marriage. After being convicted, he was sent to Tombs Prison in upstate New York, where he spent 3 months before being released on bond. While in prison, Marcus failed to win his appeals, and as a direct result, was sentenced in 1925 to 5 years in Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. Mm. So she basically had to, like, run the UNIA.
Right.
In addition to speaking all over the country to raise money for Garvey's Defense Fund, she edited and published Volume 2 of The Philosophy and Opinions of Marcus Garvey, 2 volumes of his poetry. And then while doing all that, she also worked tirelessly with lawyers to get her husband out of jail, kept the UNI moving forward, delivered speeches, did meetings with leaderships of groups occasionally, and then kept Marcus Garvey's dream alive. But despite all of that, she never assumed official leadership of the organization because Marcus Garvey would not allow it.
What? He's like in prison. He's like, yeah, you do all that work, secretary. Don't forget where you started.
Yes.
You can't work up your way in the company.
Exactly. So that is the tale of two Amys and just a little taste of what might be going on behind the curtain, because not everybody is as pronounced as the Obamas are. Like, that's a couple that we know as a power couple. But there's a lot of couples in history that are power couples.
I'm going to assume that if someone's married and they did dope shit, that their wife absolutely did help. Like, it just didn't get the attention, because it's a partnership anyways. Like, if you're doing all this good shit, there's no way that you could be doing it without the help and support of your dope-ass spouses. So,
exactly.
Ladies, you do be running this world just as Beyonce been telling us.
Been telling us.
Coming at ya like Cleopatra. Still working on it. Okay, so to kick us off with our fact check this week, I want to start with Thandi Newton. So more and more tidbits just keep coming out about her interview that she had done. E. Alex Young has just been doing really great interviews. Apparently, y'all know I am a fan of ladies who kick butt, and Thandi Newton was up for a role. She was cast in the 2000 Charlie's Angels. Oh yes, she was originally going to be in Charlie's Angels, and long story long, she dropped out because McG was being a sexist, misogynistic asshole, like just really disgusting. He's like, so it's going to open up and you think that it's yellow lines down a road and you pull back and you realize it's stitching because the denim is so tight on your ass. It's going to look like tarmac. So that was strike one. And then Amy Pascal, head of Sony, who more and more terrible things just keep coming out about this woman.
You might remember her from the Sony email scandal.
She pretty much was like, oh, I think we have to rewrite your character because she's supposed to be this educated, high prestige, you know, woman. And well, if you're playing her, and Thandi Newton was like, I don't follow, because Thandi Newton went to like Downing College in Cambridge, has a reputation of law and medicine, and plus black women be smart too, Amy Pascal. And so she's like, well, I just feel like we need to have a scene where she's just shaking her butt,
dancing on tables.
And Thandi Newton had been through enough trauma in Hollywood that this whole experience was already just so triggering for her. And I think there was a photo shoot and she just was like, I can't. So she pulled out. And of course, the role ended up going to Lucy Liu instead. So there were always going to be two white women and one woman of color, one non-white woman, but very interesting. But we did eventually get our Thandi Newton kicking ass in Westworld season 3, which we'll have to circle back to that because apparently Aneke is not as much of a fan as I am, to be continued. Also, I fucking loved Eraser. Vanessa Williams, Eraser, phenomenal. Haven't seen it in a long time. Don't know if it still holds up. And looking at the action film with a black woman being a co-star, Strange Days, which had Angela Bassett, that came out in 1995. Eraser was 1996 with Vanessa Williams. And then Mission Impossible 2 with Thandi Newton in the 2000s. Also, I think in a huff, I had dragged 1917 for not... I was talking about how in Hamilton, it was so amazing to see people of color telling a story that took place in colonial times. And I was going off on a list of movies and examples and stories where time after time, it's just white people telling those stories. And I dragged 1917. And actually, in previous episodes, I had actually given 1917 snaps because it actually did have some black people in the background or even people of color as different side characters fighting in World War I. So I just rattled it off. I take it back. But it could be better. And let's just see a World War I movie or World War II movie that's just all people of color, because those stories do exist. And a huge landmark decision has happened in the Supreme Court. They have been dishing it out lately. Some shortcomings, but a lot of huge, surprising things. In the era of Trump, it is great to have some good news. And this is a landmark. So for the first time ever, the Supreme Court is ruled in favor of First Nations people, of Indigenous people. So the Supreme Court says that half of Oklahoma belongs to the tribe it was stolen from. This is huge. It's the case of McGriff versus Oklahoma. The Supreme Court ruled that nearly half of Oklahoma falls within the boundaries of the Muscogee Creek Nation. Huge win for Native American sovereignty and land rights that will have major effects on how Oklahoma prosecutes crimes involving Native Americans and for other reservations and Native nations across the U.S. This is one of the biggest victories for Native Americans in a generation. So this is huge cause to celebrate. We're looking for news to celebrate. This is it. Also, Agent Orange has probably got to release his tax returns because the Supreme Court has ruled that he is not above the law. Alexander Hamilton would be proud. The fabrics of democracy are holding together. It's thin, giving us just enough time to get to the election to stitch it back together. All eyes on the election. And I do believe it was Cleveland who used to be the Spiders before changing it to, I just won't even repeat it, but y'all could have been those dancing buff Spiders. And on a sad, heartbreaking note, I just want to send up some thoughts and prayers to the, I don't know, hoping for a miracle. I just was really heartbroken to hear the news about Naya Rivera. If you are a Glee head like I am and was, you might know her as Santana on Glee. I'm always looking at the background and I noticed her episode one. I was like, who is she? And every time they gave her a little bit more line, a little bit more plot, she stole the show. She took a boat out with her kid and her four-year-old son, and it doesn't look like at this moment that she has survived, but praying for a miracle. And it's just a really heart-wrenching story when you hear about that her son was like, mommy dived into the water and then she didn't come back up. And he luckily, like, he's okay, and just very heartbreaking. And I just remember watching in this Glee rewatch thinking like, oh, I can't wait for her next thing that she does because she's so talented and just such a huge fan. So I'm very, very bummed and really sad, and heart goes out. Life is short. You just never know what is going to happen right around the corner. So that's why it's important for us to live life to the fullest and love life to the fullest and love each other to the fullest, because we just don't know what is going to happen. So 2020, well, we're here in this together, and I hope you all have a fabulous, fabulous weekend. Watch Hamilton. And who is your Scottie Pippen in your life? I think we're all a Scottie Pippen to somebody who's helping you with the layups. All right, well, you all have a beautiful weekend. We'll see you next week. And thank you for listening to Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.